How's it going, everybody? This is me again, Chewy, one of the hosts of the podcast titled Exploring the Myths Behind the Legends. And I am once again joined by my girlfriend, Monica.
Hi, guys.
So, Monica, we seem to have had a bit of a mix-up in this.
Yep.
But we're going to roll with the punches and improvise before...
I mean, we saw the same movie, but from different years, you know, but...
It was different adaptations of the same story, and I guess I like both of them. If I had to pick my favorite, it would be the one from the 90s, actually.
Uh-huh.
Even though the one from the 70s is a really great movie.
Yeah.
It's a really, really good movie. And, yeah. So I was going to suggest we do that one for a later episode, but I mean, you know, since we're already here, Pozeke.
You're getting a 2-for-1.
Yeah, definitely. So, before we get into that, though, let's remind our listeners of our social media accounts. We have our Facebook under Exploring the Myths Behind the Legends, and we have our Instagram under Myths Behind LGDS.
Our Twitter is Myths Behind LGDS, and you can also email us at mythsbehindlegends@gmail.com.
Awesome. And we have our Letterboxd, which is under Myths Behind LGDS, and that is a movie blog type of website in which you can go in there and review movies, you can talk to other people, socialize, make lists of movies that you like, that you don't like, etc. So, once again, that is under Myths Behind LGDS. We have our TikTok, which is Myths Behind Legends, and I'm happy to announce that one of the cooking videos that I made is quite popular
lately. Oh, nice. I saw them or popping up on, I finally followed the account, yeah. And I saw a couple of them pop up where you were like cooking, and I was like, oh, look, Chef Chewy over here.
Actually, the one that I posted, I think it was yesterday or the day before, I forgot. That one's got over 1,000 views, so I'm proud of that. Little by little, we're conquering the world here. But yeah, so our TikTok is also under Myths Behind Legends. Join us there. Follow us. Watch our videos. You can, what was it? Duet, or what is the other thing you can do in there?
Oh, stitch it. You can stitch a video. Yeah.
I mean, if you want. I mean,
or duet it. Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah, if you guys want, I mean.
Commentary. Yeah.
Yeah.
More than. So.
And our infamous website, which is under myths-behind-legends.mailchimpsites.com. I like that. Head sway, whatever. I don't know what you're doing, but...
Oh, yeah. I don't know what I was doing either, but, you know, it worked.
That was kind of cool, dude, actually.
Gracias.
So, I guess we can reveal the mystery. What was the blunder that we made? Why the confusion?
So, I watched... is it Invasion of the Body Snatchers or something? Or
I think
is it
that
called
is...
Body Snatchers?
I think that is what that version is called, yes.
Yeah, and so I watched the 1970-something version of it. And then Chewy over here watched the 1990s version, which is just called Body Snatchers.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I looked it up. I looked it up because I remember that we were gonna watch Body Snatchers, and but I guess I just what popped into my head was like, oh, the Invasion of the Body Snatchers. That's the one that's the older, you know, Body Snatchers movie.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I looked up, and that's what popped up. There was a 50s. I'm glad I didn't watch the 50s version because I was like, I don't think it's this one. It's probably the 70s one. And, you know, that's the one that I watched. But I didn't know that there was a 90s version. So, whoops.
And for the record, the 90s version was the one we had agreed upon.
Yes. I what did I even write down? Because I that night, the last time that we decided, I did write it down, but I didn't reference it today when I was like,
to what year, whatever.
Oh yeah, it says Body Snatchers 1993, so that was my bad.
Oops.
I even wrote it down, but that's still, you know, my brain wasn't working. Okay.
It happens, my friends. So I guess the audience is gonna get the first ever 2-for episode in which we will, I guess, I've seen that version before.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a long time though, so I remember stuff from it, so hopefully I can chime in on whatever it is you have to say,
yeah.
And okay. You can just give your opinion on the stuff that I was going to talk to you about on this one, but yeah,
okay.
Alright, so I guess we'll jump into our critique segment right after these messages. All right, Monica, so I'm going to give you the honors. Why don't you start with just a brief overview of what this movie that you watch is about?
Okay, so this version of it, I want to say that it takes place in New York or somewhere, like some metropolitan area, because there's a lot of buildings in the scenery. And so it starts with basically, there's this woman, and she's like the main character. I think her name is like, I already forgot her name. Doesn't matter. the main lady character. So I think it's either Elizabeth or something like that. So anyway, so this girl, you know, she's walking through the park or whatever, and she grabs a little flower. So like in the beginning, before we get to that, like there's like a scene where it's just like all this stuff floating in the air, and they literally look like little condoms. Like they look like, or like, you know, blown up balloons, like that were blown up halfway, or blown up condoms too. Like they're just floating in space, and they start to travel or whatever, and I guess they get to Earth, and that stuff is like spreading on the plants, like invading it kind of, and then it produces like this little flower or this little, like, you know, yeah, it's a little flower. So this girl takes it and it's like, oh, this is weird, let me look at it or whatever. She takes it home, and that's where everything begins. Her husband gets like snatched first, and she wakes up and he's acting completely different, and he's like taking the trash out like in the morning, but it's like, it seems like it's not something that he does. It's also very like, it's pretty misogynistic. Like it's a pretty misogynistic movie, which I didn't like that about it. But you know, it had its moments. Donald Sutherland is like super young in this movie. And then we have Jeff Goldblum in the movie too, who's also like hella young in here. But yeah, basically this whole thing revolves around like four or five people who start, you know, noticing that there's like all these changes. Everything's basically the girl. She's the one who picks up on everything first. And you got this like therapist guy, a psychiatrist, who's a total jerk, who's like gaslighting the women the entire movie. And then, you know, it turns out that he's the bad guy or the ringleader of this whole thing. This one is different from like The Faculty, because like in this version, like they actually have pods. Whenever these, like, you know, this alien substance or whatever gets in contact with the person, it starts to copy it, and then they're birthed out of the pod, and they come out like, I think they mentioned on there at some point, like they didn't have fingerprints. Mm-hmm. Like they're like a fetus basically, but it's like a grown person, like just molding itself into like the person that they're going to be mimicking. And they're just emotionless, you know, walking around the city, super creepy. But yeah, that's, you know, the gist of it.
All right. So in contrast, the one that I watched from the 90s, I remember watching this movie when I was hella younger also. The movie's from 93, so it's practically 30 years old by now.
I was 3 years old.
I didn't actually see it until maybe like 98, 99, when I was already in high school. And I remember falling in love with a girl, of course. Because the girl in the movie is like, she's like supposed to be like 18 or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I thought she was super pretty, but I mean, besides the point. So it's her and her family. Her dad is some sort of scientist.
Uh-huh.
That travels across the country to military bases to examine their chemicals and stuff like that. So, and I guess in some army bases, I mean, they store chemicals and stuff like that mm-hmm. for whatever purpose they keep them there. So this guy is trying to examine if anything's seeping into the water supply or anything like that. And when they get to this place, I think it's already started to happen. It's already mm-hmm. been happening for a little bit, but it's happening slowly. Because in the opening scene, they stop at a gas station like a few miles out of the military base. Because this happens in a base, by the way. It's not like the one you watch, it's the entire city. This is confined to a single military base. So before they get there, they pull over to a gas station. She goes into the bathroom, the girl, and she's like assaulted by this soldier guy
mm-hmm.
who kind of at knife point holds her hostage. And so he sees that she's afraid. And he's like, oh, great, you're afraid. That means we're still human or whatever. So then she escapes and she leaves. And they all leave, you know, to the base. And when they get there, things are kind of, you know. And slowly, people start getting potted,
uh-huh.
so to speak. And it's similar in the sense that it's a space plant spore type of thing.
Yeah.
Organism. In this one, it's kind of the same way as the one that it was in the 70s because, of course, it happens when you sleep.
Uh-huh.
And this one, it's the soldiers are seen in one part of the movie going to this, like, river or lake, and they're pulling the pods from under the water.
Uh-huh.
And that's the stuff they put in people's homes, so whenever the people fall asleep under the bed, you know, that's where they hide these things.
Oh, okay.
And so they get turned overnight, and basically what happens, or what you see happen, is that it kind of starts absorbing the person's DNA or their, you know, whatever, basically their whole personality.
Yeah.
I mean, quote-unquote personality, and also, like, their physical likeness, so it creates a full-size body,
uh-huh.
a duplicate, and then whenever the person is done being absorbed or assimilated, they kind of just, like, become dust for some reason. They all dried up.
Yeah.
And they kind of just sweep them and, like, you know, and put them in trash bags, and they throw them in the trash in the morning. So this is more about a smaller group of people, I guess. It's a family. And spoiler alert, everyone in the family dies except for the girl. It's the dad, the stepmom, the kid brother, and the girl. So it's four people, but it's also, like, everyone in the base becomes assimilated also.
Okay.
So it's a little bit more contained, I guess. I think this one is creepier because of that. I think it's creepier because it's a much smaller environment than, I mean, of course, in the city, it's, you could say that it's creepier because you don't know who it could be, and it's, like, millions of people in the city.
Yeah.
I think it's L.A. or somewhere in California, actually. That the one in the 70s.
The one in the 70s?
Takes okay. place, yeah. It's L.A. or something like that, if I remember correctly. And in this one, it's some military base in the middle of nowhere, like somewhere in the south. I think Alabama or Georgia, and, like, one of those states that's kind of isolated, you know, the base. So I think for that reason, this one is a little creepier. I'm not saying it's a better movie. I mean, I like it more.
Yeah.
But for, I guess, you know, because I it's that time of my life when I saw it, when I was kind of discovering horror movies, and this is one of the first ones that I really got into.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't see the original, or not the original, but the remake, which is the one you saw, the 78 version,
uh-huh.
until maybe, like, less than 10 years ago, maybe, like, 7-8 years ago. That's the first time that I saw it.
Oh, wow.
So I was already in my 30s when I saw that movie.
Mm-hmm.
So is there anything else that stands out? I mean, I don't remember it being misogynistic. What do you mean by that? I can't remember.
Well, because, like, the women get, like, gaslighted in different parts of the movie. Like, so in the beginning, one of the first things that you see when, like, because she works in the health department. She works, like, in the lab or whatever. Like, she does, like, analysis or something like that. And her friend is actually an inspector. Like, he's the one who goes out to restaurants and makes sure that there's no, like, you know, funky stuff going around. So they work together, and her husband, she comes home after picking up that flower or whatever, and she's trying to tell her husband about it. Her husband is in the couch with his headphones on, watching a game, baseball or out of football, maybe. I don't remember what sport it was, but he's watching a game. And she comes home, and this guy literally snaps his fingers at her, como que ven pa'cá, and it's like, excuse me, what the f- was that? Like, sir, you do not snap at the women. Like, she's not an animal. But, like, so she goes over, and it's kind of, they try to play it off like, oh, it's playful, like, that's how they are, whatever. But it was, I didn't, like, that was kind of just like, icky, you know. And then later, like, she's trying to tell him what she found, and, like, trying to look for the flower to see if she can identify it on, in, like, you know, books or whatever, and she can't find it, and she's telling him this stuff, and he's literally, like, ignoring her because he's watching his freaking games. And it's like, her opinion, even though this woman is, like, has a career, is educated, it doesn't matter to him. That theme plays throughout the entire movie. The women are told that they're crazy, that they're exaggerating or whatever, that they're hallucinating, or that the reason why they're complaining about their husbands, like, being changed or like, you know, whatever, is because they're trying to find an excuse to get out of the marriage, and they need to make it work. You can't just leave a marriage. That's why all these marriages are ending in divorce, because it's your fault, because you guys don't want to make it work. Wow. And it's like, what the fuck? Like, this lady's literally telling you that her husband is not the same person that she's known for the past couple years. He's changed. She would know. She's his wife. You know, and they're like, oh, no, you're just, you know, overreacting or whatever. But the whole thing was that this therapist, this psychiatrist that was doing this, that was saying all this stuff, he was in on it. So I understand, you know, at the end you find out, you know, okay, yeah, that's why he was telling them that they were fine, that they just were looking for an excuse to divorce their husbands or to leave them or whatever. But either way, he still came off as a misogynistic jerk, you know? So I was like, ugh. I don't know if it was the time period or that was, like, something that they wanted to put in there. Because I've noticed other movies, too, like Rosemary's Baby also has a lot of that in there, you know? So it's... And it was from the same, almost the same time period too, right? That was like from the 60s, 70s?
I think Rosemary's Baby is about 10 years before this, or roughly within 10 years.
Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, it makes some sense, I guess, if that's like a prominent theme in like movies from that time period. But yeah, that's what I meant about the whole misogyny. Like, it was just very, I wanted to punch these guys in the face.
Yeah, and it's not that I'm agreeing with them or anything, but yeah, I would say that was more... I don't want to say accepted, but that was more of like what you would see.
Common. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I guess that was accepted back then. I mean, it's not so much now, but even then, dude, I think it still happens nowadays. I mean,
yeah.
There's still instances where women are not given credibility because of X or Y reasons, you know?
And right.
I guess back then, again, it was something that was more open or more common, or I don't know what the word is that I'm looking for is, but...
Mm-hmm.
So I guess it kind of makes sense, but I wonder if they were doing that as a reflection of the times or a critique of the times.
Yeah, I mean, it could have been either or, honestly.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we could kind of basically spend hours talking about that.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That's what I'm wondering. I mean, if anybody out there has an opinion, do let us know. I mean, you can email us or DM us to our many social media accounts. I mean, if you think that movie from the 70s is a reflection of the times... Or if it was done as a critique, like, hey, we gotta not do this anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? So, and this one, it's kind of similar, but not really, because it's about a child is the one that notices these things first.
Okay.
And, of course, everyone thinks that children have vivid imaginations and they're not gonna listen to him.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, oh, come on, you know, you had a nightmare. It's not real. It's you know, whatever. There's a mm-hmm. scene where he goes to daycare in the base, in the military base. And this is how you know that this whole operation by the POTS has been going on for a while, because basically all the kids and the teacher and the daycare are all already assimilated.
Yeah.
And you know that because the teacher has them draw a picture, and they all draw the same picture of like this weird tentacled plant creature.
Uh-huh.
And it looks really creepy, and the kid... That is the new kid, you know, the brother of the main girl. He draws some sort of like aurora borealis type of thing. Like, it looks really cool, but it's completely different from whatever your kids like. Cause they all had the same picture.
That's creepy.
The same colors and everything, and they all hold it up, and they all look kind of like spaced out and everything. It's, you know, shout out to those kid actors, wherever they are, kids out there. I mean, now they're probably older than I am. Probably, I mean, yeah. Actually, no, they were probably in their your age maybe. Because at the time that this movie released, they looked like they were like 3 or 4 years old.
Oh, okay.
So they're probably around your age, maybe a little younger or older, depending.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so it's a child. So he tells everybody, he runs away. Dude. He just like flat out like deuces, you know, everybody. He like runs away. Like, one scene, he's kind of just sitting there. And then the next scene, he's running out in the field somewhere. Like,
what?
And it's not really ever explained or shown how he was able to escape from that place.
Uh-huh.
Because you would imagine the teacher would have stopped him or something. Or
oh,
something.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And he was like, they're trying to make me go to sleep, and I don't want to because I'm not tired and they're scary and, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And this guy brings him, he finds him in the field running, and it's a soldier. So he takes him home, and of course he falls in love with the girl at first sight.
Uh-huh.
That guy did, of course. And that would have been me in that movie. That would have been me. That was my role, rather. No, but so they... What? Become, you know, whatever, they hang out. Actually, the girl meets the daughter of the general, the one that's in charge of the base. She's like this mm-hmm. rock and roll chick. And this movie has a quite an interesting cast, too, because, like, the one from the 70s, for example, is Donald Sutherland, great actor.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Like you mentioned, Jeff Goldblum.
Jeff Goldblum,
Leonard Nimoy, who plays Spock in Star Trek.
Yes, uh-huh. That was a psychiatrist guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the girl that... At the very end is the one that is like basically the last person in the entire city that's still human.
Uh-huh. Nancy, yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah, her, the blonde girl, I think she came out in Alien. In
yes.
She mm-hmm. was, yeah, so she's a great actress too, dude.
Yeah.
Interesting cast for that one. In this one, one of the actors in it is Forrest Whitaker.
What?
He only comes out for a couple of scenes, but his scenes are pretty effective. I mean, they have he and of course everyone's favorite badass Artie Ermey, the military guy.
Nice.
He's the one that when you think of like a military guy, that's him. He's the one in Full Metal Jacket, the one that like the military sergeant.
Okay.
Everyone knows about. I mean, I haven't seen that movie in forever, but everyone remembers that scene where he's kind of telling off the recruits and this and that, whatever. The drill sergeant. That's
him.
Yeah.
I know who you're talking about. Yeah.
That's him. He comes out in this movie, and he's the general in charge of the base. And also, he's only in a couple of scenes, but he does pretty good. I think Forrest Whitaker, in his scenes, does a little better because I guess he's given more room to explore his character. Because the general Artie Ermey, he's assimilated, so he can't really show any emotion.
Yeah.
But Forrest Whitaker throughout the movie is still human. And spoiler alert: he never becomes a plot person, but he dies.
Damn.
So his death scene is probably one of the creepiest ones in the entire movie, just because how it plays out. And the girl that becomes friends with the main girl, she actually is an actress named Christina Lees, and she came out in Child's Play 2 as the main girl in that movie, in Chucky.
Oh, okay.
And
Yeah.
It's really funny because if you see them, her and the main girl, who's played by Gabrielle Anwar, Gabrielle Anwar was 23 years old, and she looks like she's 15 in this movie, dude.
Jesus.
And she's 23. And then this other girl, Christina Lees, was 28.
Wow.
And she's playing a teenager. And she kind of looks the part. I mean, she doesn't look that old. She looks maybe like she's 20, if anything. Like, kind of like...
That's the thing, though. Like, that they did that a lot back then. Like, they would cast, like, the high school kids were, like, literally 30-year-olds, you know? Like, but they... And how dumb of us to believe that that's what high schoolers look like, you know?
I guess they were trying to make them seem more mature for their age, I guess, because that, yeah. You can, they kind of had to, because they would... Or unless the only one that survives is the character's name is Marty.
Uh-huh.
And so I guess she has to have some sort of maturity. And the last character or actress that I want to mention is the mom, the stepmom character, is actually mm-hmm. played by Jennifer Tilly's sister in this... Who she acted a little bit in the 80s, and then she gave up acting for a while. She became a writer, and then she became an actress again sometime in the past, like, 6-7 years again.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a scene in which, after she's been assimilated, the pod stepmom comes out of the closet, and she's completely naked, and it's, like, full frontal.
Uh-huh.
Only for, like, a split second. But according to the credits, it says pod... You know, I forgot the name of the character, but Pod, whatever, and it says Jennifer. So I don't know if it was her sister Jennifer Tilly that played the body what? Double for that
that's
scene.
That's cool.
So if that's her, I mean, you see her naked body for like a split second, yeah. And it's like, what? Like, and then I saw the credits, and I was like, Jennifer Tilly was like the body double for that. I mean, and for the record, she looked good back then.
Oh yeah, of course.
And well, I don't know. If I remember correctly, the one in the 70s ends with, it's only like two of them, right? And they're kind of trying to run away.
Yeah, so like something, so it was three in the beginning. It was like the main girl that you know, let me look up the cast because I need to, it's driving me crazy that I don't know her name. But it's that main girl cast. Elizabeth, so that's the name of her character. So it's Elizabeth, Matthew, and Nancy that are left, you know, like, and Nancy was a wife of Jeff Goldblum's character, so like, but this guy, you know, he got turned or whatever, so Nancy had to kill him at the end. It's funny because like, so the Nancy girl figured it out. We can like pretend, like we can blend in so that we don't get busted, but like you just have to be emotionless and you'll get away, you know, like they won't notice you. So that's what they try to do. And when they run into her, because, you know, her husband was already turned, they were like, oh, are you also one of the pod people? There's like this stare down between them, you know, Matthew and Elizabeth and Nancy. And then at some point she just like makes an expression like, oh, okay, no, it's you. You know, like, it's not, you're not like a fake, you know, person version of yourself. So they leave, you know, they're running away. They're trying to escape. And at some point, Elizabeth just gets, she just, you know, disappears or something. Like, you don't see her anymore. And Nancy too, like, they all get separated. And then you see Donald Sutherland too, his character finds Elizabeth because they're all going to take a boat to take off, right? They're going to leave. That's the plan. And so they find, he's going to the docks and he sees her sprawled on the floor, like dead. And she's covered in that web stuff that, you know, the thing is producing. So, like, literally she's already dead. She's already been, like, turned. This whole time, you can tell he's, like, in love with Elizabeth. They're buddies from work, but, like, he's, like, secretly in love with her, basically. And they have all these moments where there's, like, all this sexual tension. And you're just like, are they going to kiss? Are they going to do something? Nothing happens. You know, the husband's out of the picture already because he's a pod person. So it's not like he's a problem. But, you know, so at the end of all that, when he's holding her and she's already dead, he tells her, I love you. And it's like, we know. You should have said that earlier when you guys were alive, you know, like. But so, yeah, so she ends up crumbling. She's, like, decayed or whatever. Like, it's, like, dusty or almost like how you described it. But, like, it wasn't as dusty. It was more, like, it just, like, it crumpled paper kind of and it just fell apart. And then you have that scene where, like, her pod version is naked and pops up behind the little, you know, bushes or whatever. And she's trying to convince him to, like, get turned. And you see him run away. And so you're like, okay, he got away. Like, we're good. And then you see him now, like, you know, what I thought was just, like, pretending to be part of, like, the pod community or whatever. And it turns out that, no, he was turned. Because, like, when Nancy finds him at the end, and it's like, Matthew, you're still here. Oh, my God. Like, because she's the only one left. She's the only one that hasn't been turned. So he then looks at her, and you think, oh, he's going to be like, oh, my God, you're still here. You're still alive or whatever. No. Homeboy screeches and points and is like, you're not, you know, a pod person. And then she screams. And then that's how it ends. I liked the ending, but I was like, this chick wasn't that smart, you know? I mean, well, I guess she was smart because she figured out how to assimilate or whatever. But, like, I was thinking she was going to be one of the first ones to die, and she didn't. So it's just funny that she survived somehow. Her husband was taken. Her other friends were taken, but she still made it. And then in the end, she's like, screwed.
I think at the end, she didn't survive. Because,
well, no, obviously, yeah, because
I mean, the entire city is now pod people, so she's the only human left.
That's true. I don't know about the kids. So there's a scene where, like, there's a busload of kids, right? And this guy, Matthew, is, like, walking around or whatever in the city. And these kids get down, and they're going somewhere. And they're telling them, oh, you're going to take a nap. You have to take a nap. And they're like, I don't want to take a nap. I'm not sleepy. But you already know, okay, they're going to turn these little kids into pod people. You know, like, that's what's going to happen. And, you know, the guy had lit up the whole little pod farm or whatever on fire. But I guess nothing happened. They still survived. So I don't know what was up with that.
It's not like in the faculty where if you kill the leader, because in the faculty it's like an animal, it's like a bug type of thing.
Yeah.
So that's more like an ant colony type of thing, I guess. Or if you kill the queen, then basically the colony's dead.
Yeah.
That's kind of the whole idea, I think, behind a movie like The Faculty. And this, as much as they say that what matters is the collective and not the individual, they're still individual organisms. They, like, if you kill one of them, like, or whoever you think the leader is, the rest of them can still come for you.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if the word is irony or whatever, but
they're
all about becoming part of one collective, but at the same time, they're all still individual.
Yeah.
So this other movie ends, the one from the 90s, it ends basically in a similar way. Everybody is turned, basically. There's little pockets of survivors, but they're trying to fight them off, but of course they get overrun.
Yeah.
And there's like a scene in which you see them taking the humans, whatever humans are left, into the clinics, and they're trying to, like, put them to sleep with drugs so they can be turned, and they're doing this to everybody. and they capture the girl and her little kid brother, and the pilot, which, you know, the soldier, he's like a chopper pilot. He rescues her, and when he rescues her, she's already almost turned. It's like 99%, because the pot duplicate actually wakes up and talks to him. Like, no, you don't want to do that. Come here with me. And she's naked. She's trying to, like, seduce him, right?
Yeah.
Because in this movie, the pods are emotionless, but they know that they can play into a person's emotions to get him to turn.
Oh, okay.
So there's a couple other scenes in which you see them trying to, like, convince or appeal to the human's emotions to convince him to turn, whatever. And then they escape, and then they find the little brother, but the little brother's been turned.
Yeah.
So they're already flying away in a chopper or whatever, and everyone, even her friend already, like, they find her, but she's already, like, that same little squeal that they make in pointing stuff.
Uh-huh.
That also happens in this movie. So she points them out to everybody, so they run after them, and they fly in a chopper.
Mm-hmm.
And the little kid is with them, but the little kid attacks the pilot, and he tries to get him to crash the chopper. And so they throw the little kid out the side of the chopper, you know.
Oh my god.
And the green screen effect is terrible. It has not aged very well. It literally looks like the kid's falling against like a cartoon background or something.
Oh, wow.
But other than that, I mean, actually, this movie is shot really well. Like, the photography, like, the way the movie was filmed is pretty legit up until that scene.
Okay.
But at the very end, what happens is they are sending these trucks full of pods to other army bases across the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
And so you see Arlie Ermey saying, okay, this one's going to Fort whatever, New York, and this other truck's going to Fort whatever, Texas, and this truck over here is going to whatever base in Illinois. So they're kind of like sending them out.
Mm-hmm.
So they, in their chopper, it's loaded up with missiles and everything, so they hunt down all the trucks and they shoot all of them out.
Uh-huh.
And then they go back and kill everybody. Like, they kind of just launch missiles at the base too.
Mm-hmm.
It's implied they kill everybody in the base. You don't see everybody die, but it's implied that pretty much everyone is in the base is dead. But the final scene in the movie is them flying into another base.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the last things that you hear is like a voiceover, and the girl's like, well, you know, we had a human reaction, you know, we just killed them all, whatever. And then, like, but how long can you stay awake? Like, at some point you have to sleep. So you can see them and they look tired. And she's crying in the final shot of the movie. She's crying.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering that these people, they give up and they're just kind of like give in, or they're mm-hmm. like, are they, because she says, like, you can only stay awake for so long that, you know, at some point you got to sleep.
Well, yeah. I mean, and that's the thing, like, that's how they get you. Like, that's the smartest thing to do, really, if you're like an alien, species or whatever, and you're trying to take over another planet. Humans cannot go more than a certain amount of time without sleep. They have to sleep. We have to sleep. So I'm saying they as if I'm a...
Are you a pod person, Monica?
I maybe. but yeah, so I mean, it's crazy though. You really cannot hold on that long. And if the ultimate result is like, well, if you sleep, you basically die. I mean, what else are you going to do?
I mean, if you sleep in a cave or something, isolated.
Well, yeah, I guess so. That's
they could
true.
Have landed the chopper, like, in a field and then maybe take turns and kind of, like, keep watch or whatever. Maybe you sleep for a couple hours and then I'll sleep for a couple hours. And mm-hmm. But even then, how long can you keep that going?
You can't, especially if, like, basically the entire world's already being converted into these aliens or whatever, like...
Yeah, because it's, again, implied that they destroyed all the trucks that they were carrying all these pots to other bases. And mm-hmm. it's also implied that they destroyed the entire base and they killed everybody.
Yeah.
But it's not confirmed.
Right.
So when they land in that other base in Georgia, I think Atlanta, are they kind of just giving up? Or are they going to pretend that they're pot people and kind of just, like, play it out and see what happens?
Yeah.
So I like to think that they're going to try to find a way to survive, maybe. I mean... That's the poetic human in me, I guess. But you could also argue that they just gave up after killing all the other ones that had killed all their friends, basically. And so, okay, yeah. I mean, I guess we gotta just, you know.
We avenged it. We're done. Yeah.
I mean, I don't like that ending, though. I don't like that conclusion.
I do. It's like, well, whatever. I mean, but I'm like, I like to think about doom, you know, so.
I mean, I like bleakness. I like nihilism and everything, but in this movie specifically, I don't like to think about that. Because, I mean, the characters, they're not really fleshed out too much. The movie is kind of short. It's only about an hour and 25 minutes. So you really don't have a lot of time to get to know them very well. But whatever you see, I mean, I kind of relate it. I guess it's a nostalgia speaking.
Yeah.
Because when you're a kid, you kind of feel, like, alienated and, like, whatever. Like, there's only me in the world and nobody gets me kind of thing.
And, I'm so low.
And actually, in this movie specifically, it's interesting that they picked a military base because in a city, for example, like in the 78 version, you have all kinds of people.
Yeah.
Men, women, kids. And in this one, too, you could argue. But the mentality of living in a base is different than living in a city because the soldiers, they all have to kind of like, quote unquote, assimilate to a lifestyle. I mean, they got to follow a certain sort of rules. They got to get up at a certain time. They got to do all these things, training, stuff like that. So it's kind of like a group think type of thing.
Yeah.
That's not much different from the pot people, if you think about it.
That's true.
So I thought it was very interesting that they had picked them because a base, because that's already kind of like people already do that in there.
Yeah.
In a way. So, I mean, I thought it was kind of cool.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And in the 78 version, I mean, like I said, I haven't seen it in forever, but I liked it when I saw it. I've seen it a few times, but the first time that I saw it again was about 7-8 years ago. And I remember liking it a lot, so, I mean, recommend for sure.
Oh, yeah.
I recommend you watch one from the 90s, even though now you don't have...
I will.
Technically, you don't have to anymore, but I think you should.
Yeah.
I don't know if you would like it because, I don't know.
I probably will. I mean, I like movies like that are like sci-fi and stuff and like all this. So, I'll definitely watch it for sure.
Yeah, it's one of my personal favorites. I don't think it's oh my God, it's like a great underrated classic. Because that's not what I'm trying to say. I mean, I like it, me personally. I think if you like the one from the 70s, you may not like this one. Or you may like this one because of how different it is.
Okay.
It's very similar, but it's also very different. It's a weird kind of thing. And I think this was more of like, I don't know if like a parallel universe type of thing or something. Because when they remake a movie, they try to keep the characters or some of the story points the same.
Yeah.
And in this one, it's an entire new setting, an entire new cast of characters, so it's more like like either an alternate universe or maybe like a different part of the world. So, I don't know, dude. I really recommend the one from the 90s and the one from the 70s. I think that's one of the greatest movies of the 70s.
Yeah.
For sure.
It's pretty good, yeah.
So, in the spirit of, you know, ratings, I mean, I guess we can... I can rate, or you rate the one from the 70s, and I'm not going to rate that one because that's not, you know.
Yeah.
It's not fair that I get to rate both of them and you only get to rate the 70s.
True.
So, rating the one from the 70s, I was going to say the units were how many seductive space pod ladies?
Because of the... I mean, there is a space pod lady in mine too, so it's accurate.
So, how many of those out of 10 do... does the 78 version get?
I'm going to go with an 8.
An 8?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to personally go with 8 out of 10 seductive space pot ladies from the 90s one, too, because of personal reasons. No, I mean, it's not just the you know, the nudity, but, I mean, just in general, like, I guess when I somehow, there's movies that you connect with.
Yeah.
That you watch them at a certain time in your life, and... I don't watch this movie very often because I'm afraid of like overwatching it, if that makes sense.
Okay.
But I watch it at least every couple of years and kind of just remind myself of a simpler time when I was a wee lad.
Aww.
Nostalgia. But I mean, I do think that honestly, a concept like this could probably work really well as a miniseries.
Yeah. Like I think so too. Yeah.
A Netflix miniseries, maybe anywhere from 8 to 12 episodes. I mean, I think that would be a good concept to explore. I mean, because if you do it for too long, then it kind of gets old.
Yeah, yeah.
It would have to be like a one season thing.
Yeah.
Or two, maybe. But even then, by episode 15, like, what are you going to do? Like, you know.
True.
So I would say like a limited series, and again, maybe anywhere from 8 to 10 episodes. That would be my wish list. Yeah, so any final comments on the 78 version, Monica?
Nope.
And okay, I don't really think I have anything more to add about the 93 version either, other than recommending that you watch it if you haven't. It's kind of sad that actually I do have a final comment. In the course of my research, this movie was pushed around the release date.
Okay.
It was supposed to have been released in 93. Sorry, 92. Sorry, 92. And it kept being pushed back, and they pushed it back almost an entire year. And when they did release it, they only released it in like a handful of theaters, so it only made a fraction of its budget back. Just tragic.
Yeah, that sucks.
I think it made like $500,000 back, which is nothing, really.
Yeah, that's not enough.
Mm-mm. I think, I don't know how much the budget was, but I was like, dude, really? Like this, and I'm not saying that this movie would have become a classic, like, oh my god, but if you didn't give it a chance to be shown and seen by people, then what's the point? Like,
true, that's true.
So they could have done like a straight to HBO thing or something. I don't know, maybe. But yeah, so that was our dual critique segment there. Due to unforeseen circumstances.
Exactly.
But I hope you guys enjoy that. Recommend really watch either one or both of these movies. If you haven't, watch them. They are great cinema pieces. Objectively, I would say that the 78 version is better, but I like the 93 version more.
Okay.
So that would be my objective commentary on this.
Nice.
Alright, so we'll be right back after this break with the academic segment. All right, Monica, so I thought, you know, for this, which is our academic segment, we can talk about a lot of things, but I figured, well, let's talk about sleep.
Okay.
And let's talk about sleep in a way that's semi-scientific, maybe.
Okay.
And I found a webpage that listed, I believe, 25 facts about sleep, but I'm only going to pick or talk about the 13 most interesting, because I mean, us, of course, being a horror podcast,
yeah,
we have to have 13.
Right.
So, full disclaimer, or disclosure, rather, I had thought this was a somewhat scientific journal page, whatever. Upon clicking on the links, it became clear to me that I was reading an article off of a webpage in the UK, in England, that sells mattresses.
What? Wow.
And like cribs and sleep, you know, pillows, sleep accessories, you know, covers and comforters, whatever. To my credit, they do list sources, and I clicked on those sources, and they look kind of legit, so I'm assuming these are scientific sources, hopefully. But if not, it's 13 facts / factoids about sleep.
Okay.
So, the first one. Did you know, my friend, according to his webpage, that 12% of people dream entirely in black and white?
Wow. I did not know that. That's interesting.
And a lot of that percentage happens to be older people.
I wonder if it's because they watch TV in black and white.
Ah.
You know?
You are reading my mind, my friend, because that's that is the most reasonable conclusion.
Yeah.
Because they do mention also that before color TV was introduced, only about 15% of people reported to dreaming color. That's weird.
That is weird, because we literally see color. Like, it's not like we only see black and white until the color was invented. You know, like, it's been around us. The fact that, but then again, you know, like, it's something that if you're watching TV constantly, that stuff's going to be ingrained in your brain. So it makes sense that you would dream in black and white.
I guess people would watch TV, like you said, for quite a bit of time, and then that kind of became like
the norm.
Like,
yeah,
a fantasy type of thing. I guess they would see themselves as the movie actors, you know, in the or whatever situation they happen to watch in a show or movie, whatever, and that kind of influenced their dream cycle. That's weird, though.
But I mean, every time when I watch like really intense shows, I dream about them, so it makes sense that, you know, that would work. But I don't think I've ever had a dream in black and white, ever.
I don't think so either.
That'd be super creepy, because, like, why? But, you know, that's crazy.
All right, so our next factoid is humans spend an average of 1/3 of their lives sleeping.
That's me, yeah. So, I literally sleep so much, I love to sleep. Like,
if you live to be 75, you would have spent about 25 years of those...
sleeping.
Clock hours sleeping.
Mm-hmm.
And if you happen to be a cat, that would be two-thirds for you. Two-thirds of your life is spent sleeping, according to this.
Or if you happen to be a Monica, it's 50%, you know, of your life is spent sleeping.
Yeah, so imagine, dude, how much time... I mean, I don't sleep that much.
I do.
So maybe it'll be like a quarter of my life, not a third.
Yeah.
That I get to spend sleeping.
I treasure my sleep. I love my sleep. Like, if I could sleep all day, every day, I would. But then I'd be dead probably, you know, so I guess it's not that great.
So, the longest period of time without sleep on record happens to have been 11 days.
That.
And there was, this happened in California, and it was allegedly a student by the name of Randy Gardner in 1964.
Whoa.
So, of course, the scientists that did the study don't recommend that you do that because people have actually died from lack of sleep.
Yeah.
It's possible for your body to just collapse.
Shut down. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because of the stress you're putting on it and the exhaustion is insane. You need to sleep to get your, like, energy recharged or whatever. You know, like, you can't just go on, like, without sleeping. Like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you ever heard people talking in their sleep?
I do that, actually, yes.
I don't know if I do that. I mean, I know that I snore, usually.
I've been told that. I only snore when I'm really, really tired, but I do talk because, actually, I don't think... I think my mom and my sister do that, too. My dad, too. Like, so we all talk in our sleep. Like, and my sister's actually risen from her bed in a very creepy manner and sang me an Avril Lavigne song.
That's creepy.
Randomly, yeah, with her eyes closed. Her eyes don't completely close when she goes to sleep. So it was even creepier because, like, she was, like, she was, like, her lids, like, almost, like,
half awake.
Open. Yeah. It's like, is this chick possessed? Yeah. What in the exorcist is this? But, yeah, like, I mean, I know I've talked because I've had friends tell me, like, hey, I heard you talking in your sleep. And, like, they'll tell me what I said. And I was like, what? I wasn't even dreaming about that. Like, what? And I've woken up talking. So I know I do it. Like, it's kind of creepy, too, you know? I don't know why that happens.
Well, I asked that because, in my personal story, the funniest story that I have about someone talking in their sleep, I had a roommate when I was in college.
Uh-huh.
And one time I woke up because he was talking. And he woke me up, and he was giving a speech.
What?
About something. He was talking about the environment, and we got to... you know, eliminate pollution and this and that. And he was making, actually, his hands moving and, like, doing hand gestures.
Oh my god.
So, and he was 100% asleep, dude.
Wow.
Because I was like, hey, dude, what's up? And he, like, snapped out of it and was like, what's up? What time is it? And I was like, dude, what are you doing?
Homeboy probably had a presentation and he was stressing out and he memorized that thing and he was just, like, recreating it because of the stress.
Dude, I mean, something. But I asked that because, I mean, of course, people have been reported to talk in their sleep or speak in their sleep. But did you know that deaf people or mute people use sign language in their sleep?
What? That's even creepier. Imagine you're just there chilling and, like, you know, your sister, whatever, whoever, your friend is mute and they're there just like, fuck that, dude. That's scary. That's even scarier than the talking. Like,
dude, it's just amazing how the brain works, isn't it? Like,
yeah.
The brain is trying to find a way to vocalize your thoughts, and since you don't have the ability to speak, and you know sign language,
yeah,
it'll come out like that. That's crazy, dude.
That is crazy. That's super mind-blowing.
The power of the human brain, my friend.
For real. So amazing.
Now, you mentioned sleepwalking earlier or something like that.
Yeah.
So maybe what happened to your sister, according to this factoid here, is something called parasomnia, which refers to unnatural movements during your sleep. And it can be so chronic or so serious that it's been reported that people actually commit crimes during parasomnia. So
what? Imagine
people have done hit and runs, according to this. There's been murders reported that happened under sleepwalking.
Being the lawyer for that person. Like, my client was not aware he was asleep when he committed these crimes. He has a condition. That's insane. And like, I'm pretty sure a lot of people fake that too. Like, they're like, oh yeah, like I sleepwalk.
I'm assuming that if you're gonna go with that angle for your defense, there's gotta be some sort of really intense, like, criminal study or brain study or something, like psychiatric, not criminal, but or something has to be. You cannot do that. I mean, and in relation with that, there's something called the hypnic jerks also, which is the feeling of when you're barely falling asleep and you feel like you're falling off your bed, and you jerk out of it.
Yeah,
that's called the hypnic jerk. So
that happens to me almost every day. It's kind of annoying.
That happens to me sometimes, but what happens to me sometimes is even creepier, because I kind of hear voices.
Oh, that is creepy.
The other day, dude, I'm not even kidding. I'm not making this up. I guess my brain falls asleep, or part of my brain falls asleep. But I'm still kind of conscious, because I go to bed and I hear people talking close to me.
That's so weird.
And I really can't understand what they're saying, but I hear them, like, I hear voices like, ah, da, 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 like, like somebody speaking.
Yeah.
So I don't know if my brain dreams like immediately after falling asleep and I kind of catch myself barely entering that state of sleep, or if my room is haunted.
That's crazy.
So what happens in that case, I'm like, yeah, no, I just gonna turn on the TV. I'm gonna pretend the voices are from the characters on the TV and not from, from a ghost or anything.
Oh my God.
Because I get creeped out, dude. I don't get scared anymore. I would get terrified when that happened to me when I was a kid. It doesn't happen very often. It happens maybe once every few weeks. Every few months, even.
Mm-hmm.
It happened to me sometime, I guess, today's Friday, so it might have been Tuesday or Wednesday, but it hadn't happened in months since before this time, so. It's still creepy, though.
Yep, for real.
And to kind of close that whole thing off, it's believed that about 15% of the population are sleepwalkers or have experienced sleepwalking at least once.
Mm-hmm.
So
I've seen it. I've never done it, but my sister sleepwalks.
Oh, no, when I sleep, I sleep. I pass out, but I'm a light sleeper, though. If I hear a noise, I'll wake up.
Oh, yeah. Me too. I think that's why I probably wouldn't be able to sleepwalk, because, like, I'm not a heavy sleeper, like, at all.
Yeah. And like we mentioned earlier, sleep deprivation can actually kill you, and it'll kill you faster than food deprivation.
Mm-hmm.
If you actually stop eating, I think the conclusion that these people came with or whatever is that you can live for an average of up to a month.
Well,
you'll be miserable. I mean, you'll be starving like the whole time.
Of course.
By that point. So, but again, it's said that maybe within 2 weeks, 10 to 15 days, you would die without sleep.
Yeah.
So that's intensive.
That is intense.
And the thing is, I read an article when I was in college that, mind you, this was about 15 years ago or longer, that it still wasn't clear why people need to sleep.
It's not clear why people need to sleep?
Yeah.
Huh.
I mean, biologically, theoretically, you could keep going without sleep, but not really.
Mm-hmm.
Because, again, if you don't sleep for a decent amount of time, then you'll die, like we just said, but nobody understands why our brain needs to go into that state. I mean, we know that it does, that it has to.
Yeah.
But we don't know why. And I mean, this was back then. I don't know if there's been any breakthroughs in this science of sleep since then.
Mm-hmm.
But I just thought I would share that anecdote with you guys.
Yeah, that's very interesting.
People that are born blind, they dream or they claim that their dreams are about other things, like emotions, sounds, or smells. Not any visual cues, because, of course, they don't have the ability to see.
Uh-huh.
And if they're born this way, they never see anything. But if somebody becomes blind through the course of their life, depending on how old they are,
yeah,
they could still dream about visual stuff.
That's crazy. But that also be, like, kind of torture, you know, like, because it's like, you can see in your dreams but not in real life, like,
yeah,
it's kind of sad.
Yeah, so I guess, you know, if I am to believe what they found with this study, whatever, is that the people that are not able to see report that they feel their dreams rather than see what happens.
Okay.
So.
Wow.
That's crazy, man. I had a dream a couple nights ago that I was being chased by, like, a group of mercenaries.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't even know why. I can't remember why.
That's crazy.
I was hanging out at my friend's house, and they're like, oh, these guys are coming for you. So I run away, and I find another place to hide, and they find me. And this is, I don't even know why, dude. Like, but, I mean, just, your dreams are weird.
Mine are really weird, too. Like, I have really vivid, intense dreams that I still remember, you know, and I've had them like years ago, but they're a good source for stories, so that's always good.
Mm-hmm. And the one thing that I dream about consistently and in that dream I had a dream about it was raining or something. It's always about water, dude. Water is always somehow connected to my dreams.
That's weird.
Or in the vast majority of them, I always dream about rain. Or mm-hmm. being in the beach, or being in a pool, or in a lake, or something. It's always, or something is like a building is flooding, or something.
Yeah.
It's always a component of my dreams for the most part, and I bring that up because, according to the next factoid here, it says that within 5 minutes of waking up, about 50% of what your dream is forgotten.
Yeah.
After 10 minutes, about 90% of your dream is forgotten.
Mm-hmm.
According to the conclusion that they arrive here. So they also say that Sigmund Freud believed that the reason why that happened is because dreams are the way the brain has to express its most secret repressed thoughts or fantasies about your life.
Mm-hmm.
And your brain wants to repress that, so it just erases that from your consciousness.
The hell?
That's what he believed.
That's crazy. I mean, I understand it, but, like, why don't I get to decide? Why does my body decide for me? That's not cool.
You know, dude, it's kind of weird because, like, it's like you were saying earlier, it's kind of torture because sometimes life in your dreams is a lot better than it is in real life.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's true.
So,
sad girl hours right now.
A little bit of a side note. If you were given the option to gonna, like, slip into, like a sleep chamber...
Uh-huh.
And they could make you visualize any kind of life you wanted for as long as you wanted.
Yeah.
Would you do it?
Nah. No, because I would never leave. I'd never leave. Like, you know, I would be stuck there. Nah, I wouldn't do it.
Let's say they're like, well, I mean, we'll give you the option. You can only do this for up to a week.
If anything. No, because let's say that my life is amazing in my dream or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Dude, then when I have to wake up and go back to real life, it's going to be so depressing. Like, no. I have my own imagination. I can come up with scenarios in my head. I'm good with that. Like, I don't need to be, you know, immersed in something that's going to make me feel everything, you know, and then come out of it just kind of like, now I got to go back to my regular life. Like, you'll become addicted. You'll mm-hmm. become addicted. It's like people that there's this one movie. I don't remember what it's called. But it's about virtual reality, and these people put like these like helmet things on themselves, and they can literally imagine whatever the fuck they want. They can live like a virtual life, and you see them like in the streets, you know, hooked onto these things because they're addicted, because their life sucks, so they're imagining like better lives, or they're, you know, with people that they want to be with or whatever. Like, the possibilities are endless, you know. So it would be like a drug, you know. It'd be that's too much power. Mm-mm. I wouldn't do it.
I don't know if I would do it, to be honest. I mean, I would be highly tempted to, though.
Yeah, I would think about it, probably obsess over it for a little bit, but then I'd be like, nah, I'm good.
As a scientific experiment, I think, well, just put me in that world for like 2 days, you know?
Mm-mm. I don't want to risk. Mm-mm. No.
But then,
Mm-mm.
What if your brain refuses to leave, to wake up?
That too.
Because it's having such a great time in the alternate life of yours.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Nah, I don't want to do that. I wouldn't put myself through that. That's too much. I know I can't handle it.
So food for thought there, I guess.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Would anybody, I didn't do a poll for this, and I should have for this week.
Yeah, that would have been a good question. Yeah,
I can do it. after this, and I should be able to share the results next week.
Cool.
But I mean, yeah, because I was honestly caught up with work, and I kind of just forgot. But okay. I think we have a great question.
Yeah, for sure. I want to see what other people have to say about that.
Mm-hmm. And, well, another factoid here. We're on number 10, or 11, sorry. 11. Says here that there is a direct link between people's favorite sleeping positions and their personalities.
Okay.
And the one that stood out for me was that people that choose to sleep in the fetal position more often mm-hmm. are usually people that play or appear to be tough, but are actually very sensitive souls to their core.
Aww, how cute. What about the people that sleep, like, sprawled on the bed, like, with the leg up? And face, you know, on the side, because that's how I sleep.
I think they call it the free fall, and I don't have that here, but I can send you the link if you want
to read it. Okay.
Because they have a list of that, like the more common sleeping positions. Yeah,
I want to know what mine represents, because that's my most comfortable, like, sleeping position.
I would sleep, and I would, when I was younger.
Uh-huh.
I was told that I would fall asleep like I was dead.
What?
Like, kind of like they lay you in the coffin when you're.
Oh yeah, like face
kinda,
up.
With your like perfectly straight and your hands across your chest, kind of like.
Ah, okay, like that, yeah.
That's how I was told that I would fall asleep when I was a kid.
That's crazy. That's kind of weird for a little kid, like.
No, but even when I was in high school, like one time we went on a field trip and somebody told me like, dude, like you creep me out because, I mean, you know when you go on field trips, you share rooms with friends of yours, whatever.
Yeah. Uh huh.
So. He's like, dude, I woke up in the morning and I saw you and you looked like you were like a vampire, like you were dead because you're like...
You're going to be like, ooh.
I know, I kind of like do a sit-up. But I was like, dude, honestly, I was asleep and I have no idea. But he's not the first person that told me that. I mean, my brothers would tell me that. Dude, like, you sleep weird. Like, what the hell? Like,
yeah, that's funny.
But now I don't even care. Like, or I just fall asleep in what I think is one position and wake up in a completely different one. So, I mean, I guess I shift during the night.
Yeah, me too.
And, well, in a very unsurprising factoid here, people that make a lot of money sleep better.
I'm not surprised at all. Mm-hmm. I would too if I didn't have any bills to worry about. Yeah.
I mean, I think they have other things to worry about.
Yeah, but they can easily be solved with money, so it's okay.
Yeah. And the last one that we have is, and highly appropriate for our podcast, it's why do you think, I'm going to ask you before I reveal the answer. What do you think is the most commonly felt emotion when someone has a nightmare?
Most commonly felt emotion?
Yeah, like.
Like fear, despair, I don't know.
That's what you would say?
Yeah.
For the record, that's what I would say too, but these people say that no, it's not that. People that wake up from nightmares report that they more often than not feel either sad, guilty, or confused.
That makes sense. Okay.
I mean, I guess sadness could be a byproduct of fear.
Right.
Because you're mm-hmm. afraid of feeling miserable or sad that you're feeling afraid, rather.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But or whatever guilt, happened. But dream, guilt? Yeah. I mean, why would you feel guilty about a nightmare? Like, unless, like, you're the villain in the nightmare, then I guess you could...
Or, let's say... scenario here that in the dream, because a nightmare could literally be anything that happens that's like intense or whatever, but let's say the nightmare was somebody was shot and you couldn't save them and you wake up feeling guilty. It's like, even though it was a dream, you feel, oh man, I wish I could have done something, or they died because of me or whatever, you know, like anything okay. can happen in a dream. But that makes sense. Mm-hmm.
I guess that reflects my egocentric personality, because I would never think of other people in my dreams.
Wow.
It's all about me. I'm the main actor in all my dreams.
Okay.
No, but honestly, I hadn't considered that, so thank you, my friend, for that.
You're welcome.
Point of view.
Mm-hmm.
So, what do you think of all these?
They're pretty cool. They're very interesting, for sure. Like I said, I love sleep, so I know how much it would affect me if it couldn't. Like, dude, there was a time when, like, my dogs were, like, in heat or whatever, and the boy dog wouldn't stop howling and crying because he wanted to be in the same kennel with her because he wanted to freaking bang. He wanted to smash.
Oh, yeah.
And I let him, you know, so the whole night, dude, howling nonstop. Wow. And I didn't sleep for weeks until that whole thing passed. And it was the worst time I ever had in my life. Like, yeah, no, I was always mad. I was stressed out. When I don't sleep, I get really, really, like, mad. And, like, I'm in a bad mood all the time. So, yeah.
I just feel frustration when I have to wake up in the morning.
Uh-huh.
It doesn't matter. I can sleep 12, 15 hours, but if I wake up at a certain time in the morning, I feel, like, angry.
Okay.
I am not a morning person. I can go to sleep right now, which is, like, right now it's 11:30 at night.
Uh-huh.
And you would think, well, by 6 in the morning, you're getting about 7 hours of sleep. I mean, nah, that's not enough. I could go to sleep at 8 o'clock at night and wake up at 6 and I'll feel miserable.
Wow.
I need to wake up between, like, 10 to 12.
Okay.
To feel like I'm doing all right. And it doesn't matter. I mean, I mean, of course, the longer if I sleep an average of, like, 4 to 6 hours a night, I'm good.
Mm-hmm.
As long as I wake up within that time frame.
Yeah.
So if I go to sleep, for example, from like 5 in the morning to 11,
mm-hmm.
I'm good. That's 6 hours.
Yeah.
But if I go to sleep from midnight to 6, I'm miserable. I hate it.
Yeah.
Like, I am not a morning person. Like, my brain's not wired for that.
Oddly enough, like, I have become a morning person unintentionally. Like, I will wake up early in the morning and I'll be fine. Like, I don't want to be up, but I'm up. Which is weird. And I don't even need an alarm or anything. Like, I literally wake up at, like, 5, 6 in the morning almost every day without an alarm, even on the weekends.
That is weird.
Granted, I do go to bed, like, at 8 or 9 at night. So, I go to sleep early. So, I guess my body's just, like, ready to go, you know? But, yeah.
All right. So, I guess that was our academic segment on the science of sleep, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
So, any other comments, my friend?
No, sir.
All right, so we'll be right back after these messages. Okay, everybody, so we are now at our Know Thine Enemy segment. And basically here, if you're a first-time listener, we describe a little bit more of the details that pertain to the villain. Which in this case, my friend, happens to be the plant pods from space.
Mm-hmm.
So their classification under our system that was developed with many Nobel Prize winners from across the world. So they would be deemed to be classified as aliens. Because, of course, mm-hmm. they come from another planet. And in the movie from the 90s,
mm-hmm.
it's not like you said, in which you see kind of these things floating in space. The opening scene of this movie from the 90s, it's basically just space, like stars and stuff.
Oh, okay.
Flying around. And at one point, they do say that they've traveled light years across space.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know they're alien, but yeah. So basically, that's also their origin. I mean, it's just nobody knows exactly where they come from. But all that we know is that they have traveled across space. And maybe, I don't know if they've been to other worlds or not. In the 78 version, but in the 93 version, they mentioned that they've been to other worlds.
I think they did. I think they said something about their planet dying, and that's why they were there.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't remember the exact, you know, story.
And basically their main motivation is to convert everyone into their own species, I guess, and colonize the planet and just live there as long as they can, and whenever they can't anymore, when life becomes unsustainable for them, just do, yeah. Mm-hmm. How do they fly off into space? That's another question. Like last time, I have no idea how these plants shoot off into space.
I don't know, man, because, like, on these, it seemed like they just, like, landed somehow. So...
Just free-floating through space?
I guess so, yeah.
Hmm. Because, I mean, I guess with humans, humans can build rockets and spaceships and stuff like that. They really can't go very far, but when you're this kind of thing, you don't have to... Like... I guess you don't have to eat that much, or I don't know.
Yeah.
And if they can't survive in space, then you really need... As long as you get out there somehow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You can just float around and...
True.
Kind of catch a ride in a comment or something.
Yeah.
An Uber.
Yeah, Uber a comet too.
Where are you going? I'm going to the Andromeda Galaxy. Okay, let's go.
Got you.
All right, so... What are some of the things they can do, or how do they do it? I mean, they can do one thing, but...
The one on in the 70s is, like, it's through the little plant. So, by having that plant around, I'm assuming it's the same way, like, with the spores or something, you know, where, like, it kind of just, if you touch it, it starts to cover you. And then, I guess it sends a signal to a pod or something, and then that's how the body starts to be created. And then you get replaced. So, there's that. But I don't know what actually happened, like, in the... When they would take them to, like, an actual building and, like, they were doing the mass ones. I don't know if they just go, like, with the little plant, like, think, like, what a little...
No, right? No, no,
yeah. I don't know. But, yeah, I mean...
No, and the one from the 90s, they... When they're doing the mass... assimilation, I guess, when they put them in the clinics and they put the humans to sleep, all they do is they put the humans in the gurney,
okay,
or in a hospital bed type of thing, and they put this plant next to them on a table or a chair or something, and it kind of just does its thing. It extends tentacles out,
and that's kind of what this one does too. Yeah
and it goes into the person's nose and mouth and stuff like that, and it kind of starts absorbing their genetic code or whatever.
Yeah, like this one had like a little web thing that also would come out of like the pod things, the pod people, or the actual, you know, plant. And I'm assuming like by touching it, like that's how it's copying everything. But yeah, same thing.
And weaknesses. I mean, the one in the 90s, they are shown that if they don't complete the process, they die.
Okay.
So they have to complete the simulation process 100%. Otherwise, they just kind of crumple and die.
Okay.
Yeah, so I don't know if it's any different. I think it's the same thing in the 70s, no?
I think it is the same. And but like, the one thing that I was like, okay, so how do you defeat them? Because, like, there isn't really... I mean, they tried blowing them up, and, like, I don't think that worked. So... And it's not like, you know, like we said with the faculty, where you could just kill the main one, and then that kind of, like, destroys the rest of them and turns the people back to normal. Well, the one thing that I did notice is that if you get the person that's being, like, infected or whatever by this thing away from the plant or from the pod, they go back to normal. But they have to be at a distance. So...
And is that after or before they complete the process?
During the process.
Okay, yeah, well, that's the same thing in this one. Like, if it's happening and you stop it midway, then the person still becomes themselves. Like,
oh, okay. Yeah.
So I guess it's the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And in this one, at least in the one that I saw in the 90s, you can kill them with conventional weapons. They're vulnerable to gunshots. They're vulnerable to flamethrowers, to missiles, you know, so there's not, like, any...
Oh, okay. Yeah.
...added benefits to... I mean, they don't gain invulnerability or immortality.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I guess if you don't shoot them, if they could technically live for a long time. It's not really explained, is it? Like, how long they live once they've...
No, they don't really say that. Mm-mm.
Once they've completed the assimilation, it would be interesting to find out what the quote-unquote natural lifespan of these things would be.
Mm-hmm. How many years? I want to know is, like, what is their purpose? Like, why create clones of people, kill the original host?
It's like a parasite, like, kind of thing. I mean... there's different kinds of symbiotic relationships in nature. I'm you know, showing off my vocabulary there.
Biologist Chewy.
I wear many hats, my friend, and one of those is hack in biology. I am not a biologist, by the way. I it's one of my least favorite subjects in school. But Yeah, it'd be kind of cool to find out what the reason for that is, because, I mean, they're already alive as pods.
Yeah.
They're kind of just chilling and hanging out until they can find a person to assimilate.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, but it's kind of the same thing with parasites. I mean, they can kind of survive on their own for a bit, but when they attach themselves to a host or whatever, that's when they start living their best life.
Mm-hmm.
That's how it happens in nature, at least. In
yeah, that's true.
The documentaries that I've watched.
The extensive knowledge of
yeah. But, I mean, like I said, you can kill them with conventional weapons, so a gunshot that kills the host body in turn kills the parasite, I guess. So,
okay. Mm-hmm.
What is your opinion of these plant pots from space, my friend?
Well, they're... if you don't pay attention, you know, they're pretty effective, because who's going to stop them?
Huh.
So, but I mean, they're just kind of there. Like,
yeah,
I don't really care too much for them, because it's like, what else can you do besides cloning?
Yeah, I mean, those things aren't really explained too much. And that's why I mentioned earlier, like, if they made a series about this, maybe you could explore that a little bit more.
Right.
Mm-hmm. As to what the end game to these things is, like, what is the actual, like...
purpose. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, I think they're pretty sneaky. I mean, like you said, if you're not careful, they can always slowly but surely overtake you.
Right.
And I think that people would end if something like this actually happened in real life.
For... Mm-hmm.
Because people wouldn't believe, or they would refuse to believe what's happening in front of them.
Mm-hmm. And then before you know it, everyone you know is not them anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Sadly. So, how many skulls in the scare meter do these plant pots from space get from you, my friend?
I'm going to go with the 5.
5?
Yeah.
I'm going to give you a 7, only because I know they would, in fact, conquer the world.
Okay.
But I take away 3 points because you can kind of slow them down if you shoot them or whatever, burn them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So... 5 and 7 average out to a 6. It's not
okay.
bad.
Okay, that works.
Not bad, this works for me as well. Any final remarks on these alien parasites things?
Well, I would definitely die because my weakness is sleep, so I would not survive this, for sure.
I would keep guard over you, my friend, because I'd never sleep.
Sounds good. Sounds like a plan.
I mean, well, I'll eventually fall asleep, but hopefully by that time you're awake.
Right, we can take turns.
So, that was our Know Thine Enemy segment, and we'll be right back with the closing remarks.
Wah, wah, wah.
Monica, the audience, and myself, Le Sad Face once again, because we are at the end of our episode.
Ooh.
I agree with you 100%, my friend, on that. So, but we do want to thank everyone that took time to listen to us today. If you are a first-time listener, thank you very much. We hope you appreciated our episode, our content, our delivery. If you did, please be sure to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or Podchaser, or both. Why not? The more the merrier.
Yes.
And yes, give us your gold stars on there. And we hope you come back for more and that you explore our library of episodes. Just stay away from episode 1 for the meantime, because that is still the worst one ever. We are going to remake that one for sure, my friend. So
yes,
hopefully sooner rather than later.
Mm-hmm.
And if you are a repeat listener, we want to thank you also, because you are a faithful member of the EMBO squad.
Woo!
So make sure you keep retweeting our stuff, resharing our stuff, spread the word, let us expand our empire slowly but surely.
And then we will conquer the world.
Yes, that is our end game.
Yes. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, shoutouts, my friend. I have a shoutout. We were recently given the opportunity to join another group on Twitter.
Ooh.
So, sadly, I have not interacted with the people there that much because we literally were asked to join yesterday.
Okay.
So, we kind of, I mean, we're still part of the Illumi Party. That is the OG group that we're part of. Nice. But, you know, it never hurts to network and expand your horizons here and there.
Mm-hmm.
And so I want to give a shout out to the Culture Cast Collective for asking us to join their group. It looks like they have a lot of fun in there. There's a lot of comments and funny gifs and you know.
Mm-hmm.
So slowly but surely I'll be reading through those. And
nice.
Yeah. So how about you, my friend? Any shout outs on your end?
No. No. Oh, actually, shout out to my neighbor for taking out the trash cans last couple of weeks. Like, yeah. I kept going out there to take them out, or I would forget, and then I would see them the next morning, and they were already outside. And I was like, "Huh, I wonder if this was an accident or if he's just being nice." And then I asked him, and because I ran into him, and he was like, "Oh yeah," he's like, "You know, I come home from work sometimes, and I have a lot of trash from work, so I kind of use your trash can too." And I'm like, "Perfect." I was like, "Because I do not consume that much trash, so it works out." So yeah, thanks to that dude for helping me out. That was pretty cool.
Well, shout out to Monica's neighbor for being a team player there.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, I do have one more thing to say before we remind our listeners of our social media accounts, Monica, is that we have an official store.
Ooh.
And we just received our sample shirts.
Sweet.
So I'll be mailing that to you hopefully sooner rather than later.
Okay.
Along with all the other merch that I've been holding off for you.
Okay.
But I can give you guys the link for that. It's kind of long also, but it's worth it. There's different shirts, different colors, different styles. There's also mugs and a pint glass on there. So sweet. The link is under... And I put this in our link tree, by the way, and I already shared that to our Twitter. So it's under. You can just go to our Twitter and find the link tree and find the store there. But if you prefer to do it this way, mm-hmm. it would be under EMBL, like our podcast, mm-hmm. /swag.creator/spring.com.
Sweet.
So that is our storefront. Feel free to order as many shirts as you want. Mm-hmm. We do get a small commission on those orders because we don't have the shirts on hand. What happens with the store in particular, my friend, is that they make the stuff for us and they keep a percentage and they give us a percentage. So,
sweet. Mm-hmm.
Your donations are appreciated. So thank you very much if you buy anything from there.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to, I still have some pics and stickers left and the postcards, by the way, I have those also. So if you want to buy those, you can DM us. Because
mm-hmm.
I couldn't put those because the store makes their own stuff, so I can't put our stuff under.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But we can still send those out your way. And actually, I was thinking of giving some of those away, so
mm-hmm.
I might do that in the future, in the next couple of weeks or so. But now it's time to remind our listeners, my friend, of our social media accounts. Okay. We have our Facebook under Exploring the Myths Behind the Legends, and we have our Instagram under Myths Behind LGDS.
Our Twitter is MythsBehindLGDS, and you can also email us at MythsBehindLegends@gmail.com.
All right, awesome. And we have our Letterboxd, which is under MythsBehindLGDS. We have our TikTok, which is MythsBehindLegends. Thank you guys for watching my cooking video. Over 1,000 views for me. That's like a landmark moment in my life, dude.
Oh, yeah, dude. For sure.
I mean, people get better jobs, they get promotions, they have kids, they buy a house.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I'm happy because the video that I made has over 1,000 views on Twitter, on TikTok. Baby steps, my friend, baby steps.
Yes, it's the little things. Yeah.
So we have our infamous URL for our website, which is under myths-behind-legends.mailchimpsites.com.
Woo!
All right, Monica, so having... given our links already, what is the hint for our next episode? What's gonna happen? What are we gonna do?
Well, we're gonna watch a movie where you gotta wear some glasses to see the real reality.
Chan chan chan.
Ooh.
And I believe there's only one version of this, Monica, so we should be okay.
I think, yeah, I think we'll be fine. I've seen it before, too, so I know what I'm looking for. All
right, awesome. So just to kind of make sure we're on the same track there, on the same...
Yeah.
I mean, usually we are, so...
Yeah.
This is one of the few times...
Fumbled the ball this time, yeah.
...in life that we didn't sync quite correctly, but...
Right.
It's right. Yep. It happens.
Yeah.
Nobody's perfect.
Exactly.
Not even Neem.
Aye.
So that was our episode. Thank you once again for listening, you guys. And until we see you, have a great morning, evening, madrugada. Don't fall asleep next to plants.
Mm-hmm.
Take the plants out of your room so don't trust them.
Yep.
If your neighbor starts acting differently, maybe they're not the same anymore. Or maybe they, I don't know, maybe they are drunk or I don't know.
Yeah. Well, either way, stay vigilant.
Yeah, stay vigilant. And once again, don't trust the plants. So exactly. Until we see you again, be good to yourselves, to each other, and have a good one.
Bye.